is sponsored by the First Year Office and the Dean of Students. And we're going to talk about essays and term papers today. And as we start, I want to use an acronym, SMART Plan. And this is what it means. Start ahead to stay ahead. Plan to stay ahead. That means the best way to overcome procrastination and get your papers done on time is to begin immediately when you have an assignment so that you manage your time. You put your deadlines in your agenda and work back from those deadlines for all your term papers and for your essay exams when those come up. Begin your assignments immediately, and I'll talk about that in a couple of minutes. You need to be active and or action-oriented. Set your deadlines. Make an internal deadline. You've got an absolute deadline for a term paper. Give yourself your own deadline a few days earlier, just in case something goes wrong. But it also will give you a chance to get away from the paper, to make it strange for yourself. Review regularly, often. Look at what you're doing, your work plan. Be resourceful about using your own learning style effectively. Are you a visual person? Are you an auditory person? Are you a kinesic person? That all goes into the way you approach your work. And the final thing, the T, is talk about your essays, the topics, the subject matter, in a networking group and with your friends. Because we help ourselves by talking about what we think, what we know, what we don't know. This is the key, in my mind, for essays and term papers. The three-point plan: subject, purpose, and audience. You'll be given an essay assignment. That is not your topic, your final topic. The subject of your essay, term paper, can be manipulated by you. You need to narrow down the focus of what you're doing. And I'm going to give you a very simplistic example. My field is English literature. All right. In North American 20th century literature, Hemingway is one of the renowned authors, has a large body of work. So you might be given an assignment in a North American 20th century literature class to write an essay about Hemingway. But you can't write everything about Hemingway. You have to narrow down the topic. You have to take what might be a floodlight and ramp it down until you've got a spotlight. So how do you do that? By following your own interests. When you get an assignment, start writing, free writing, which means writing what you know about the subject. And you're just writing for yourself, so it doesn't matter about spelling, grammar, punctuation. Write what you know, what you think, what you don't know, what you like, what you don't like. So if I were doing this in my very simplistic example, what I like about Hemingway, what I find intriguing, is his whole machismo philosophy, the macho. And so I would work towards that as the beginning of my interest. And then, because I need to have some way of displaying this, I would choose a couple of novels from the list of novels on the course of study and do some compare and contrast. Create some criteria for examining the effect of the machismo philosophy, particularly on his attitude towards death, as it's displayed in the character development in a couple of novels. Okay, so now I've got a focus for my paper. I can talk about that development of the philosophy, the attitude towards death in the major characters in, say, for whom the bell tolls and the sun also rises. Two examples where this prevails. So now I've got a topic that's mine. So my subject is defined. What's my purpose? Your paper has to have a purpose. My purpose is to inform someone about what I think about my topic. So the nicest way that I can do that is to decide what I think, to turn my topic into a question. And this is a neat little trick. What is Hemingway's attitude towards death as developed in the principal characters in those two novels? Again, my simplistic example. But now I've got a question, and I can write out an answer to that question. And I've got a beginning for my paper. So now I have a subject that's mine, and I have a purpose. I want to tell my readers what I think about that question, about that subject. The third thing is the audience. And this is where I think most of us get into trouble, because we assume the audience for our papers is the professor or the TA who's going to evaluate the paper. And indeed, that's true. But we get some extra clout if we can define a target audience, an appropriate audience, beyond the professor or the TA. A group that will want to read my paper. And to do that, I go to the periodical journals. I'll look online or in the library to see if there is a journal that is devoted to 20th century North American authors and maybe to Hemingway. If I can find one that has Hemingway as an interest, I've got a potential readership that will want to read my paper. That doesn't mean you have to send the paper to the journal. It just means you write it as if it were going to go to those readers. So now you have the three points together: the subject, the purpose, and the audience. And you're going to write a paper that will be different from everyone else's in the class and will have a readership. So let's take a look at how this plays out in a production plan. You read your assignment and read it carefully for the criteria and the scope of the assignment, because your professor will tell you how many words, what parameters there are for the assignment. And if you're not sure, ask questions. At this point also, you need to know what documentation style you're expected to use, whether that's APA, which is the American Psychological Association, MLA is the Modern Language Association, and there are others. So that's a question that you need an answer for. It's style is not how you put the words together, but how you cite the sources, the references that you use. And they're specific and they're different. So as you're gathering information, you will need to know how you're going to present it in your paper. The various style guides are summarized in grammar handbooks. There may be summaries available in the library online, and some of the style websites like mla.org have frequently asked questions which will bring you up to date on how you present things like electronic data. There's a sign-in. And if you have a cell phone, please turn it off. All right, so you're ready now to begin your plan. So you've got your subject defined, and you've got your purpose thought out. Your main arguments are going to be arguments that will address what you want to present to your readers? Are you here for a workshop? Come and have a seat. So, we said you free write on what you know about the topic and narrow your focus. All right? Create a purpose statement. What do you want to tell your readers? And a good way to start that is Ron Blick's strategy. I want to tell you and fill in the blank. And it comes from the answer to your question. The question, what is, how, where, when? The answer to that question is what you want to tell your reader. So that gives you a purpose statement. Another name for that is thesis. You may have learned that. Thesis is just a short form of hypothesis, which is an idea that you're going to test or you're going to argue out in your essay. So you're going to convince your reader of your thesis. Turn that, your statement, the I want to tell you that, into a question, and the answer to that is the beginning of your hypothesis. Preliminary research now is appropriate. You notice I didn't say when you get the assignment, go to the library and start reading the shelves. I made that mistake as an undergraduate. I didn't think I knew anything until I'd gone to the library and looked at what everyone had written. But if you've been following the course, you can do that free writing. You can narrow down your topic, and you can begin with your purpose statement. Then it's appropriate to look for the major references that are going to support your position. So keep track of those references, and you will need to keep track of them in the style guide that you have to use for your paper. If you're using Word as a word processing program, you'll find that there are capabilities in Word for using different citation styles. And one of the things that the university offers you is on the library website, or by putting in the search engine on the homepage, free downloads, you can download EndNote and Reference Manager, which are both style management programs. And the university provides those to you free of charge, which is quite a gift. Reference Manager, for example, I think is about $600 or $800. So this is nice. And you can have them on your computer and use them to organize the references for your papers. Next, you're going to make a plan. Your subject, your hypothesis or purpose statement, and your main arguments, the main points that you want to make to present your idea. The important references, list those. Now what you need is the appropriate target audience. And here's where I think you want an insurance policy. Make your plan on paper, these steps: subject, hypothesis, purpose, and target audience. The main arguments, the main points you want to make in your paper, and the principal references that you've found. Then you take them to your prof's office hours to get approval for your plan. That's your insurance policy. Approval means that you've got a license to write the paper. It also means that you may get some gold handed to you. Your prof may say, you know, that idea has sort of been overworked, or it's not really a valid approach. Why don't you think about this? Or he or she might say, you've got a couple of references in there that really aren't the best. Why don't you look at, and you're given some advice. You won't get that if you don't have a plan. Your plan then is approved, and you're ready to begin writing anywhere. You can begin your research to refine the sources that you found and any that may have been suggested to you. The documentation style is how you're going to present your references. So each time you look at something, keep track of what you're looking at in the appropriate style. Write the body parts of your essay. You can begin those almost immediately now. So procrastination is held in control by beginning step by step. Body parts, conclusion, and something I learned the hard way, write your introduction last, because then you know what you're introducing. I many times tore up the first, and I started, you know, back when you were typing with an electric typewriter, so I mean you don't have that behind you, but I do. And I tried to write an introduction that wasn't going anywhere. I learned for essays, term papers, theses, essay exams, write your introduction last. On an essay exam, leave room for it. Write the body and then write your introduction. The title of your paper cannot be the title of a book or books. Those are proprietary. So you need to give your paper a title that sort of points to the content of the paper. Choose a phrase from your introduction or your conclusion that prepares the reader for the introduction and gives your paper a unique title. And do that in an essay exam as well. Essays on an essay exam have the same structure as an essay or a term paper. The expectation is the same. Proofread. Well, of course, if you're using a word processing program, you've got spell check and grammar check. Spell check is wonderful for the correct spelling of the wrong word, because that'll happen. How do you get by that? By reading your paper out loud or having someone else read it to you. You know, find somebody who loves you and read your paper to them. And if they look at you like, I don't understand, don't ask them to correct it. You look at what is causing a problem and fix it. So by reading it out loud, a couple things happen. You slow it down. You actually hear what you've written, which is a very powerful check on the flow of your writing, the logic of it, the correctness of it. And you enable yourself to see where there are errors. So this is a good approach to proofreading for a paper that you're going to submit. In an essay exam, you can't exactly do that. So in an essay exam, read your paper from the last paragraph, the conclusion, back to the introduction. So you put it out of sync. That way you have a better chance of seeing whether there are problems with the continuity, the structure of the sentences, etc. And remember I said when you create your deadline for the for your paper in your agenda, I assume you all have an agenda book that you use. This is a handy one because it has all the university dates in it as well. But you have an absolute deadline for your paper, and you give yourself your own deadline a few days ahead so that if you need to make any changes, then you have time. If something else happens and you're sick for a couple of days and your work plan is just a little bit off, you've got a buffer of time to allow yourself to catch up. Now, I want to show you a tool that is very helpful in planning your essays and on essay exams. But this is something you need to practice. And the benefit of practicing this mapping tool is that it allows you a good review of material that you're studying, but it also gives you a tool to use in an essay exam. And a map is simply an image of information. And you create a map by writing the topic in the center of your paper. So for your essay, put the topic in the center. Write the main ideas or the main headings in bubbles around the topic, and use lines to connect the main headings to the topic. Put major details to support those main ideas and add any necessary minor details. So I'll show you. Well, I think we have time. We have time to do a mapping exercise. So I'm going to give you just a quick mapping. Take a piece of paper and just make a plan to organize these words. How would you organize them? How would you structure them? How would you categorize them? And just write down the categories. We've got tigers, harmless squirrels, deer, pets, dogs, black panthers, domestic cattle, animals, cats, dingoes, horses, livestock, possums, dangerous lions, and woodchucks. Now, how would you organize those? So put it on paper. How are you doing? If you're sitting beside someone, or if you're not sitting beside someone, just slide over a little bit and take a look at what the person beside you has done and show them yours. Because they're all going to be a little different. You're going to organize these according to your life experience, according to the way you see things. For example, I'll show you. Okay, this is one example, categorizing all of them as animals and then dividing them into wild and domestic, and under wild, harmless, and dangerous, under domestic, pets, and livestock. And some people would put pigs as pets, and some people have cattle as pets, calves, etc. So depending on who you are in your life experience, it's going to be different. But the point is that you can categorize things, but you learn something by sharing, by networking what you have done. All right, this is a map. And maps are a very useful way of organizing information. So it's a tool to practice. Practice mapping difficult concepts in your courses. Practice mapping a chapter in a textbook. Make a map for your essays when you have your plan, your essay plan, and get used to using this tool so that in an essay exam you can map the topics that you're given to write on. And sometimes you're given maybe five topics and you have to choose three from those five. So a good strategy then is to map them all on the left-hand side of the exam booklet and see which three you have the best stuff for that day. But you've already begun to take information from your long-term memory and put it on paper so that you don't have to carry it in your mind, and then you can expand your map so that you can manipulate this image. And those of you who are visual, and most of us have a pretty strong visual sense, will find this as a powerful tool to assist your memory in remembering details. How many of you will have multiple choice exams? Just about it. I think that's everyone. This is another powerful tool for studying for multiple choice exams. A map allows you to create a picture of a process, a concept, a difficult section of your course, and see where information belongs, what belongs together and what doesn't belong together, because that's how you're going to be examined. So this is a good strategy to practice. It's a good tool for your toolkit. Okay, at this point I'm going to ask you what questions you have. Somebody must have a question. Yes?
I have a question, but I'm sure I missed it at the beginning. When do you write your thesis? At which point?
It should be in your introduction, because you're preparing the reader for what you're going to present in your argumentation. And an essay is like an argument to convince a reader, to inform them, to convince them to change their way of thinking. So you want to write that introduction last, because then you know what's going to be in your paper. And a good strategy, once you've got your paper in its nearly final form, is map it again, or outline it, to make sure that each section is coherent, cohesive, and that there aren't parts in a paragraph that don't belong. But your introduction will not tell the whole story, but tell the reader what to expect. Okay. Does that answer the question? Yes?
Do you have any tricks for narrowing down information in your body paragraph? Because oftentimes I find myself writing everything that I know down and not cutting down on my information.
Okay. Well, you have to go back to your subject and your purpose and your audience, those three elements. Because when you have an audience in mind, and for example, with my simplistic approach to 20th century North American authors, if I'm writing for the readers of a Hemingway journal, they know the novels. I don't have to provide a summary. So what does your target audience already know? What will they expect you to tell them in your paper? This will help you to decide what you need to put into the paper. And when you make the plan to take to your prof's office hours for approval, have your main arguments there, the points you're going to make to support or to present your thesis. And that will give you a plan that you can then flesh out. And again, when you're done, go back and map it or outline it to make sure that you haven't gone off plan. And I think that should help. Because if you're just writing without a plan, without a subject, a purpose, and an audience, and without that outline plan, you risk going into off topic and padding it out with things that are not relevant. Okay? Another question. Yes?
How would you recommend starting for if you had assigned a term paper on
Are you sure you know nothing?
Yes.
I'd question that. I would start with the journalistic questions. Who, what, where, why, when, how, and how much. And put the topic at the top of the page and write what you know or you don't know for yourself. Just for yourself. And then go back and look at what you're telling yourself. A really fine researcher into the teaching of writing, Donald Murray, said, you know, you have to tell yourself what you think. So write it out. Do that free writing. You might want to do it a couple of times. And write for about 20 minutes so that you've actually got something there. Just think about what you feel about the subject. What do you think? What if? Could you combine some things? Could you bring other subject areas into this because they might be interesting? You have to kind of tweak your own interest in the subject and respecting the criteria of the assignment and the scope of the assignment, you have to get in there and make yourself an expert. So saying you don't know anything about it doesn't really cut it. And I think you'll find that you do know something, or you know what you feel about it, and that's helpful as a start too. Does that help?
Yeah.
Has this happened to anyone else, that you have a topic that you know nothing about?
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing? Well, it helps to look up the words, the concepts, to place them in your discipline. And that can be done pretty quickly. Then begin to look at what that's saying to you. Yes. Well, here I think is where you need to focus. I don't think there's a definitive answer to your question. But when you narrow things down and you find a point that will allow you to write and research deeply rather than broadly, you're going to find your own specific point, your own subject. And again, even if it's in a field where people know a lot, you're going to find something that interests you enough for you to become an expert in that area. See, it's hard to write for a prof if you feel that prof knows so much more than you do. This is where finding an appropriate target audience gives you some clout. Think about the people you're writing for, not your prof. And then review it for the academic expectations. But give yourself that, a good target audience, a periodical journal, you know, the journals that are published and are online or in the library, that's a good level of discourse. That's a good register. It's an academic level. So you won't be in danger there. Does that help? Yes.
What's the difference between an essay and a chapter?
Not much. Not much. Terminology. Term paper is very often the paper that you submit at the end of the semester and carries maybe a larger weight in terms of your evaluation. Maybe. Okay. And something I haven't discussed is the request for an extension. And I think that getting an insurance, an approval on your plan is an important part in the whole process of preparing and presenting an essay or a term paper. So if something happens and you're sick with the flu for a couple of weeks, and of course we're in flu season, so we're all washing our hands and all of that, but things happen. If you have demonstrated that you've done your work, done your planning, then it makes it, from the prof's point of view, much easier to accept that something has gone wrong and you may need additional time. So all of this production plan is an important part of your scheduling. And in fact, it prepares you for the kind of work that you're expected to do if you are in graduate studies. Okay, another question. Yes.
Is there a place for emotion in these papers? I always find that sort of stuff keeps my interest.
Well, emotion very often gets put in the first person, right? I think, I believe, I find. Yeah. A good strategy for that is write it out the way you feel it, the first person, but then take away the first part, the I think, I find, I feel, and make the statement which you can then support. It's a much stronger writing point. It's still the first person, but you're now presenting a concept that you can develop or defend. Is there another question? Yes.
Is it okay to start a paper with this essay is going to support this or this essay is going to support this?
It's kind of clunky. So go back when you've finished your paper and think about how you would tell an educated friend who loves you about your paper. You wouldn't say this paper is going to do this or that. You would say, you would introduce it in a way that lets the reader know your interest and what you're going to develop in the paper. Now, that said, there are some professors and TAs who want that kind of didactic approach. So, again, look at the criteria, ask the questions. Does that help? Okay. Any other questions? Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know what these things are, but maybe when you started your research, like I myself didn't even know what those things were. How do you know when to incorporate them, like an explanation into the paper?
Well, again, I think it's the criteria for the paper. What are the expectations? And when you go for approval for your plan, that's a good question to ask. Because and you're not asking for someone to give you anything. You've done your work, you've made your plan, you've done your preparation. Then you can it's fair to ask a question. Should you lay out this concept? And any time that you're referring to something specific that's critical or that's different from the general stream of information, you have to explain it. You have to define your terminology. And in the scientific paper, you're looking at reproducibility as well and clarity so that someone else can take what you're writing and carry it forward. Okay, does that help?
Yeah.
Another question. Yes. Well, look at what the organization is. Can you take out half of it and develop that? You know, paragraphs have their own internal structure: a topic sentence, some development, and a conclusion and a bridge. So, if you've got too much in the paragraph, we're not looking at whether or not it's too long. We're looking at whether it's got too many elements in it. So, again, outlining it or mapping it might help you to see whether or not you need to subdivide. Think about your reader. and how they're following your argumentation. Read that long paragraph out loud and see if it is too convoluted, if you can simplify the organization by dividing it. Okay? Yes. Well, in a good conclusion, you point back to what you've developed, to your argumentation. If you have convinced your reader, then you may want to say that the points are conclusive. Have a look in your discipline at journal articles. It always helps to read them, to find out how they are structured, how the introduction is written, and how the conclusion is written. It's going to vary from one discipline to another, and from whether, in fact, what you're writing is a research report or an argumentation, an essay. But a really good thing to do is to look at the periodical journals in your discipline. Well, I'm going to stop there and say that if you have any other questions, I've put my email address on the board. I answer email. Just tell me that you were in this workshop so that I know what you've heard and what you've seen. And I'll wish you the best of success. Oh. There it is. So good luck.